Okay, the next argued case is number 21-1547, Zephyr Construction Company against the United States. Mr. Gdansky, are you arguing?
Yes, I'm arguing.
May it please, thank you. May it please the court, Abraham Gdansky on behalf of the appellant plaintiff, Zephyr Construction Company. If it's okay, we'd like to reserve 5 minutes of time for rebuttal. Okay. We're here before the court today to discuss the issue of Zephyr's December 2014 claim and whether that claim is considered a claim under the FAR and this court's
case. Can I just ask you one kind of factual question here before we get to the debate? If you thought that was a claim, why did you however many years later, submit another document that you called a claim and ask for a final decision?
Right, Your Honor. So we did that. The claim, the second claim that you're referring to was in 2018. And the history of this case and situation was that Zephyr first submitted his claim in December 2014. During that time, the parties went back and forth as to the amounts.
Sure, that's not what I'm asking, though. If you thought the 2014 document was a claim, why did you need to submit a second claim? If you thought the contracting officer wasn't giving you the resolution you wanted, couldn't it be already considered a deemed denial that would allow you to sue?
Correct, Your Honor. But what happened was in 2018, the contracting officer told us that he will no longer be considering our claim and he's going to issue a decision. At that point, we decided internally what kind of decision can there be and how can they deny this when the negotiations have been on the merits, which they've been working out the finer, there was an audit, they were working out the finer details on the amounts. So we internally said the only way they could try to deny this is if it's based off of statute of limitations. We went back. We said maybe they're going to do this based off of an argument that we didn't submit a claim. So as a precaution, we submitted the 2018 claim, and we put in detailed language requesting a contracting officer's final decision. Even though throughout, we always believed that our 2014 claim satisfied the elements of a claim.
So it's just prophylactic. But you agreed, well, maybe you don't. The 2018 document does seem to be, if it's the only claim, seem to be untimely.
If the
2014 REA is not
for the statute of limitations issues that within 6 years, correct.
So your 2014 claim was for a sum certain.
Correct.
So basically you're saying to the government, you owe me this amount of money.
Correct.
But then later on you write that Zephyr spends or will continue to spend considerable man hours until the final settlement of the REA. Such costs are not included in the REA proposal. It seems to me that that statement implies or maybe even establishes that you were negotiating at that point in time, that you didn't have a claim, that you were simply negotiating. And maybe that's why you came out with a 218 claim.
No, Your Honor. The document we submitted in 2014, it was the 167-page detailed claim for some certain with specific amounts for each item which we alleged we were owed based on a change order. When we submitted that to the government, we said this is based on the government's breach, and because of the government's breach, we're entitled to all costs related to this breach as we go forward.
Is there any substantive differences between the 2014 and the 2014 and the 2018 claims?
The document itself is the same.
Correct.
We filed it because, in all honesty, in somewhat of shock, we thought that we were taken by surprise that they would try to allege a statute of limitations issue here. So just as a precaution, we added the one language which we know the case law doesn't specifically require, but we added it anyway to show that we at least have it in 2018.
Now, that may have been a good move on your part.
Right. We were proceeding this whole time, assuming it's a claim. Again, this contract was finished in, I believe, 2012. It was for some certain. It was based off change orders that came from the government. The government, at points, agreed that they were change orders. It was just a matter of the overhead costs relating to the claim At no point could it ever been a routine invoice or something of the sort that was previously submitted during the course of the job through requisitions. This was clearly a claim for some certain.
And the government's objection seems to be that because you said you were willing to negotiate this, this didn't evidence an intent that the contracting officer issue a final decision on that. And I think that's what they got the Court of Federal Claims to sign off on, right?
Correct.
Where is that in the statute, that your claim has to include a request for a final decision? I know that it's in our case law in some places, but I went back and looked at the statute and the regulations, and I don't see that any requirement that you have to formally say, I want a final decision on this. It just has to include the requirements you've been reciting, which is some certain, the evidence supporting it, the amount requested, and a certification if it's over a certain amount.
Correct, Your Honor. It's nowhere in the statute that it requires a request for a final decision. What it does require under...
What's the point of that final decision line of cases?
I think it has to do with the fact that they want, if it really is for some certain outside of the normal, ordinary course of routine payments, you'd be asking for a decision on the matter, meaning it's not, and that's why in some cases where they, in, for example, Maropakis, where the court said that it was not considered a claim, it was because it was through an email. And in that email, they're saying, practically, this email is something that was done, you know, during the ordinary, it was a routine type of request for payment. But in cases like Hedron, in cases like Reflectone, when you have a document that had that requests the sum certain over 100 pages and asks for a specific amount, and specifically here, just like Hedron, where because it was over $100,000, it had the certification under the penalty of perjury, it is not a typical request for an ordinary payment. So the reason why I think...
When you say typical request for an ordinary payment, are you referring to... I mean, I've read these cases, and a lot of them seem to be trying to figure out what are invoices and normal requests for payment under the contract or claims under the CDA. Is that the point of the final decision? Because sometimes, I guess, an invoice can turn into a claim if it's disputed and you ask for a final decision. Is that what Reflectone and all those cases talking about the need to request a final decision are for?
Exactly. They're trying to differentiate from a typical invoice and what would be a claim that's not a typical invoice. And what they say is what they say is if you were to request a final decision, that would differentiate you from an invoice. However, there's no magic language required. And even without the request for a final decision, you can see from specifically as in Hedron, when you have a full lengthy document requesting this type of payment, especially after the contract is finished, and especially with the certification, it's not that typical.
If there's no magic words, as our case law says, how do we determine that your claim, that the words that you do use, is established as a claim under the law?
I think when you satisfy the obligation for the definition of a claim, which is under FAR 52.233-1C, which are the three requirements of a written demand, payment of money, and the sum certain. When you have those three items, that's usually not done in a typical form of an invoice. An invoice won't be done through a 100-page document that's certified and refers to breaches as well. Our document referred to breaches of the contract from the government and change orders. That's not how an invoice is submitted, especially after the contract is complete.
Can you think of instances where a formal request for an equitable adjustment would fall under the kind of routine request for money that doesn't rise to the level of a claim?
No. No. I mean, thinking out loud, no. I mean, I know what a typical invoice looks like. I know what a requisition would look like, where it might detail progress of payment, you know, based on percentages of work complete. But when you have something outside of that in a lengthy document explaining why you're owed money based on a disputed amount after the contract is finished, I don't see how any document like that can not be a claim. And in terms of the the government in response referenced the fact that there's negotiation. The case law is clear that you're allowed to negotiate. And in fact, they prefer you to negotiate disputes prior to a conclusion. And I think that just goes along with business common sense, where if there's a claim, you always want to negotiate rather than go to court. So writing that we're going to negotiate does not prevent it from being claimed, nor does the case law say so.
Can you find quickly for me the last page of your claim?
Sure.
I was reading it the other day. I meant to tab it, but I forgot.
Sure.
It's, as you say, it's long, so.
It's on page.
What page are you on?
That's in the appendix on page. Because it has the certification there. Appendix 204 is the last page of the claim, and it's under Section H of the claim, conclusion and certification amount.
Right, this was what I was looking at. I'm just, and this probably is better addressed to your friend on the other side, but I'm just a little confused as to why this can't be read as a claim when it has a discussion about how contracting officers are required to deal with claims fairly, and just notes the, you know, the Corps of Engineers' commitment to dispute resolution. I mean, I don't see how you categorically rule out a claim just because you want to go to ADR or some other form of resolution short of litigation.
I agree, Your Honor. We're in agreement, and that's why it's there.
So the government's position would essentially be that if you file something like this and ask for resolution, then you have to at some point file another claim demanding a decision if you're not satisfied with that before you can get to court.
I suppose they would say maybe you should file another document without this language in it. However, these are, you know, in the real world with the government, the Army Corps, the Corps of Engineers, and a contractor, these things are happening in real time. And when a contractor submits its claim, it also wants to get paid. So it's definitely open to some sort of resolution without a finalization, which is why they always include this type of language.
Right. Let's take this up with the other side, and we'll save your rebuttal time.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Kapoor. And it's okay to remove your mask while speaking.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The question before this Court is straightforward. Did Zafer submit a claim prior to the one it submitted in February 2018? The Court of Federal Claims determined that it did not, and that court was correct. Now, I'd like to...
If the claims are identical, then... What's the difference here? What are you looking for? Seems to me that your argument borders, if not crosses a line that what you're looking for, what the government's looking for, are magic words of some kind. And yet, what are the magic words?
Well, Your Honor, we are specifically not looking for magic words. What this court's case law has demonstrated is that the contractor must evince some type of intent to seek a contracting officer's final decision. As came up in the prior discussion, there is no difference.
Where is that requirement located in the statute or the regulations?
The explicit requirement stating you must ask for a contracting officer's final decision is not in the statute. It comes from this court's case law.
What's the point of that case law?
The point of that case law is to puts the government on notice that what the contractor is seeking is that final determination, that we've crossed the line from a case like this one, where the contractor was seeking to negotiate to resolve a request, versus the path towards litigation, which the request for the...
You're not saying that once there's a claim that's made that all negotiations have to stop, otherwise you don't have a claim.
No, not at all, Your Honor. And in fact, that's a point that I definitely want to address. We're not saying that negotiations somehow cut off a claim. You can have negotiations, and you can have a claim, and you can have both at the same time. But the issue here is that Zafer explicitly requested only one of those things. It only asked for negotiation. They use an example in their reply brief at page 2 as though somehow...
They did ask for money, though, right?
They did, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's... Go on. I mean, that's more than just negotiation.
I mean, how are they going to get money on a request for an equitable adjustment without a contracting officer's decision?
Well, they could negotiate for further payment, Your Honor. And this goes to this...
It has to be given through a contracting officer's final decision.
Well,
it's a request for an equitable adjustment. This is, first of all, we're not talking about routine invoices or anything like that where you might need to determine whether this was an intent to ask for a contracting officer's decision or it was just a routine submission for payment under the contract. That's clearly not what's going on here, right? This is a detailed request for equitable adjustment to adjust the terms of the contract, including allegations of breach by the government and the like. So that's not an ordinary contract interpretation or ordinary payment under the contract, right?
If you're asking, is it differentiated from a routine invoice? Yes, there may be some distinction there. However, the fact that there was a 167-page request is not that unusual. For a contractor to be seeking additional payment under the changes clause of a contract or seeking payment for some alleged delay, any request of that sort is going to require detailed support and justification. So just the length of the request or the detailed level of it does not make it out of the ordinary for the contracting process.
So you think this document we have here falls on the other line of ordinary payments under the contract versus claims, that we use that final decision language to differentiate?
I would say, Your Honor, it falls short of the request for the final decision.
No, I don't. See, I think that you all have taken that request for a final decision language way out of context. And the whole point of that seems to be because it's not in the statute anywhere. You have to look at it in terms of the case law. And the whole point of it seems to be to differentiate between routine requests for payment and other things under the contract and claims to the contracting officer under the CDA. And I don't think you can just isolate and pull out that as a new test. You have to look at the point of it. And this document does not seem anywhere close to a routine request for payment. You can dispute this if you want, but how is this document in any way similar to the routine request for payment where they use that final decision language to differentiate it from a claim?
Well, Your Honor, if we're talking again about the difference between, routine invoices and so forth, and I also would hesitate.
This is not a routine invoice.
No, I don't dispute that. No, if we're talking about a routine invoice, no, we're not trying to say that that's the case. But again, to try to make some distinction between a routine invoice and what rises to the level of claim, we have to have some differentiation between that. And I think it's also important to note that throughout this entire process...
I get that, but that's a case where you're talking about a routine invoice or something that clearly could be considered not a claim and something that might be considered a claim, and you really have to dive into it. How is this request for equitable adjustment even remotely something that could be considered routine.
It's not, Your Honor. And obviously the government engaged with this request. So we're not alleging that it was something that, you know, just slipped through the cracks or they forgot about. As the record indicates, there was extensive back and forth. But the point that I think is critical in this process is that it's the contractor that holds control over whether or not something progresses forward to the level of a claim and then to litigation. Otherwise, we'd have a situation where, you know, we would be searching for any...
Let's take a look at Appendix 204. This is with in regards to what you just stated. And I think this goes back to your position. It appears to be your position that I don't think is supported by our precedent, that the contractor has to show an intent of some sort of finality. That's your position. There's got to be some showing of intent that for finality. Anyway, I direct you to almost the very last sentence in the claim. It says, we trust the contracting office will take immediate steps to resolve this. They're asking you for money, and then they say, pay it now. Why isn't that? Though I disagree that our law requires the showing of intent to finality, but why is that not that showing?
Well, because, Your Honor, both on this page and at multiple other points within the document, Zafer has requested not for a final decision, but to enter into negotiations. And there are other ways that payment can be affected.
Again, you're elevating this final decision requirement into its own specific technical step that has to be met that is nowhere in the statute, nowhere in the regulations, and is used by this court to distinguish between routine invoices and routine requests for payment and claims. And so I don't... When we have something that is clearly not a routine request for a payment, why are we even looking at that? This is a claim. It says it's a claim. It finishes a certification and says, I'm authorized to certify the claim. We don't need that line of cases to resolve whether this is a claim or not.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor...
It seems like you're now imposing a requirement that we've rejected over and over again, and also creating a new class of something that's between a routine request for a payment and a claim that is a settlement proposal that is somehow not a claim because it allows for negotiation. But if you get, let me ask you this, if you had the same document and had everything in here and said, we wish to resolve this short of litigation and hope to negotiate this, but request a final decision, that would be a claim, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, that's what Zafer...
Doesn't that, given that the content of everything else here suggests that you're elevating this into a formalistic technical requirement, because everything else that they've asked for is the same thing. They've laid out what they want, the supporting evidence, they want to resolve it, and they want the contracting officer to give them a decision. They didn't say technically they want a final decision, but they want this resolved.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, we're not asking for a change in the law at all. There is an analog to this case.
No, I think you're not asking for a change in the law. You're elevating a line of cases to a hyper-technical requirement that we've rejected over and over again.
We're not asking for a hyper-technical reading, and to answer your question, there is a distinction between a routine invoice and a claim, and it's the entire regulatory scheme behind a request for
equitable adjustment. But you've already said this isn't a routine request for... This isn't an invoice.
It's not an invoice, Your Honor. It's a request for equitable adjustment, which has its own requirements under the FAR. A request for equitable adjustment also has certification language that is required. But the regulation still distinguishes between those two things. It has this entire scheme there for a request for equitable adjustment, which is distinct from a claim, and has those requirements in it. And as the court asked appellant...
So is it your position that a request for equitable adjustment can never be a claim?
No, Your Honor, because we're not arguing for the magic words test. We're not saying that someone who puts the title of a request for equitable adjustment on a document automatically cuts it short of being a claim. What we are asking for is for this court to apply the cases which we cite to our brief, concluding in Hedron, where when you have an appellant who did exactly what Zafer did in this case.
How do you transform a request for equitable adjustment into a claim if it's not always a claim?
Exactly the way Zafer did in this case in February 2018, Your Honor. They asked for the final
decision.
They used
the magic words.
They evinced an intent to have the contracting officer issue that decision. At no point throughout this
process. How do you evince an intent without resort to some sort of verbiage?
Well, you have to ask for it, Your Honor, but I don't think the...
So do you have to ask using certain words? Obviously, it's not a physical posture you're looking for. It's a verbal posture.
Sure, Your Honor.
But what are the magic words you're looking for?
Again, I don't have a...
The only difference between these... I'm sorry for interrupting. I know you're getting frustrated with me. It's okay. I used to be on your side. The only difference between these two things, though, is they asked for a final written decision, isn't it? I mean, basically, that's the difference between the 2014 document and the 2018 document.
Yes, it is, Your Honor. But it's also significant that...
But again, I mean, since I cut you off from answering Judge Reyna's question, what is it? How could they evidence an intent to seek a final decision without using magic words?
I think the magic words... discussion here has taken it to a level where we're saying, okay, we don't need a specific set of words. They don't have to pull the precise language from the regulation, but they still have to ask. At no point...
Are you saying it was reasonable for the contracting officer to understand that he didn't have to decide this request?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes. Because...
What were they negotiating for 4 years?
They were negotiating for the additional payment, but at no point during that 4 years...
They were negotiating what? For fun? For exercise? That this was not a request for payment?
They were asking for payment, but at no point in that extensive back and forth, which is detailed in the record, there's not an email, there's not a request that says, where is our final decision? Over this
You're
entire period of time.
That this contractor was required to interrupt negotiations and stop them and say, I want a final decision. I want it now because 6 years are running.
They didn't have to interrupt the negotiations, Your Honor. The claim itself would not...
You file a request for final decision that doesn't interrupt.
It doesn't need to, Your Honor, if the contractor continues to negotiate. And that's, again, the point that I was making earlier.
The government would need to continue to negotiate. What's to stop the contracting officer from saying, all right, I'll give you my final decision. You lose.
The contracting officer could do that, Your Honor. But, and this is a key point, the contracting officer doesn't have that opportunity until the contractor makes clear that they're asking for that final decision.
You're saying then the contracting officer could not have issued a final decision?
I see my time's expired, if I may answer the court's
Please
question.
Please answer the question.
Yes, that is the overarching point that we're making, Your Honor, is that as counsel indicated in his portion of the argument, Zafer's arguing for no distinction between an REA and a claim, ever, which would mean that a contracting officer would be...
They're not talking about ever. They're talking about this case. There's 167 pages of detailed billing and a courteous request, let's talk about it.
Yes,
and that was fatal, you're telling us. Because once the 6 years ran, the government didn't have to talk anymore.
Well, Your Honor, they did not ask for the decision. They specifically asked for something else. Again, you can have both a claim and negotiation at the same time. But in this case, they only asked for one of those things and then proceeded to engage
in it. I'm a little baffled by this notion that there's some kind of third avenue out there, that negotiations to ask for negotiations is not a routine payment nor a claim. There's nothing, I mean, this is nowhere in the case law. It's nowhere in the statutes or regulations. But that's what you seem to get Judge Brueging to buy off on, the notion that a request for negotiation somehow falls short of a claim, even though it's clearly more than just a routine request for payment.
Yes, Your Honor, it's a request for equitable adjustment that stops short of a claim, and there is that distinction within the regulations.
But you agree that a request for equitable adjustment that meets all the requirements for a claim is a claim.
Well, this court's case law has that, but it has those specific statements that say the contractor requested a final decision. And the decision in Hedron specifically looked to the behavior of the parties.
Can you give me an example of an equitable adjustment that doesn't rely on this request for negotiations language, but has, here are differing site conditions, you know, because of that we had to work extra hours or do all this extra stuff, and it required us to expend an additional $5 million, you know, we request resolution of that.
Well, in fact, that's exactly what they asked for here in the September 2013 and December 2014 REAs, where they said, we have all of these amounts that we would like paid to us, and we would like to negotiate it. And again, there is that language that says we would like to...
Want to get away from the negotiation language, okay, because I think it's not particularly compelling to me. What other class of requests for equitable adjustments do you see that don't rise to the level of a claim?
I'm sorry, what other class?
Yes. I mean, you said requests for equitable adjustments mm-hmm. are under separate provisions of mm-hmm. the FARs, and I know that. I can see that. But when are they not considered claims also?
Well, the extra requirement that discussing here is...
Give me some hypothetical facts where you ask for something, you set out a detailed legal argument,
sure,
and you set out a detailed quantum, when that's not a claim.
Well, I mean, it could be, I understand, Your Honor, I apologize. It could be in any number of classes of claims. You could have delay, you could have changes. I think probably changes would be a good example of what we're talking about here, and the need to request a final decision, because most contracts have that changes clause in there, and a contractor would be saying, under the contract, under the changes clause, something I was requested to do something different.
That makes sense, because that's routine request under the contract, not to claim breach of contract and alter the terms of the contract. So, and you referenced delay, same thing. Maybe you're just asking for, you know, days and not monetary compensation on a delay claim. Those all seem to be routine requests under the contract, which is the whole point of the written decision language, to differentiate between that kind of routine contract administration mm-hmm. stuff and requests for additional money and asking a resolution of it under the claims language.
Well,
I'm sorry, I've gone on too long, but I mean, how is this not on that line, that this is just not anything remotely a request for additional days under a delay clause? It's not a changes clause request. It references breach of contract and requests additional monies. The only thing you can hang your hat on, it seems to me, is that it doesn't have any phrase that requests a final decision. Is that right?
That is the key point that we're looking at, but to address the point that you're making, Your Honor, about calling this routine, again, this particular request, in that definition, the way I understand the court to be asking it now, is routine in the sense that we have many situations where you have delay, you have changes, and here they were asking for over $6 million. A contracting officer is not just going to, you know, issue that payment without detailed support and potentially talking or maybe negotiating with the contractor.
There is in the 167 pages?
Yes, we're saying that this is a fairly routine request, and we have to have some way to differentiate between when a contractor is asking for additional payment, again, in a relatively routine way, although very detailed. But they're doing this in a routine manner. There has to be some way to differentiate when that is happening versus when the contractor is asking for that final decision, which would allow the government to issue the decision, cut off the interest period that is also running, because that's another issue we have here, is that where the CDA interest clock is running, and until the contracting officer is on notice that the contractor is asking for that final decision, they have no opportunity to issue that decision and then, you know, start the litigation clock that would fall on the other side of that.
Wait, I just want to, I'm sorry to belabor this, but I heard something in your last answer that bothered me. You said that contracting officer didn't have any opportunity to issue a final decision. So are you saying in response to this, the contracting officer couldn't have said claim denied? I don't think you meant that.
I think that if the court were to rule that...
Just answer the first question. If the contracting officer got this in 2014 and looked at it and said, I'm not interested in negotiating this, I don't think you have any basis whatsoever, denied.
Well, the contracting officer, again...
You're saying the contracting officer wouldn't have the authority to do that.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that he wouldn't have the authority.
And if he said that, that would be a final decision, wouldn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, but the contracting officer engaged in an extensive back and forth. There was a DCAA audit to determine whether or not there was any merit. And that's the entire point of having a contracting officer's final decision, is to allow the agency to investigate a request, determine whether it has merit, and potentially make the payment without having to engage in litigation. But if they're not on notice that they need to issue that decision because the contractor is seeking to go to litigation, then the contracting officer would essentially have to do that out of hand in every routine request
for payment. This case is a statute of limitations case, right? So we're talking exactly about notice. And why is it that your argument seems to be that the contracting officer in this situation had no notice as to the nature of the claim vis-a-vis the 2014 REA?
Not that he had no notice as to the nature of the claim, Your Honor. There was not the indication that the case would proceed into litigation.
There is notice. There is notice of a claim, a sum certain. It's backed up by 168 detailed report. Wouldn't your reasonable contracting officer at that point go, my God, you know, I mean, these guys are serious now. They want their money. They attached this report, and, you know, they want $6 million. So there's notice. The notice was there.
I think a reasonable contracting officer would do exactly what the contracting officer did in this case, which was engage with the contractor, call for the audit to see if
the contracting officer had notice of their claim at that point.
I would dispute that they had notice of the claim because, again, that is indicating that they wanted the final decision at that time.
This final written decision line of cases we have that is not rooted in the statute.
That's correct.
Let's just assume that line of cases didn't exist. Is this a claim?
I think that if that line of cases didn't exist, and this court were to say that all that's required is a some certain and some type of certification language, then the category of what would be considered a claim would be immeasurably broadened.
To include this.
To include this. But it would include pretty much literally any time a contractor asks for any amount of money at any point in the process.
And says it's authorized to certify the claim on behalf of the contractor.
But again, Your Honor, also asked specifically to engage in something short of litigation.
But that's the final decision stuff. I mean, if a contractor sends in an invoice and says, pay me, that's not a claim under any definition because there's no certification. Sorry, we've taken way too long.
Do you want me to respond?
No, I don't have any more questions.
Okay.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Last chance?
I don't have
anything else? Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gudansky.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to refer the court to a quote from the Hedron case, which goes into the specifics of why there is no magic language and why this claim, like the claim in Hedron, was not a routine request for payment. And in the case of Hedron, and I'm quoting, it says, "This submission bears all the hallmarks of a request for a final decision on a claim. And this court is loath to believe that in a case, a reasonable contractor would submit to a contracting officer a letter containing a payment request after a dispute had arisen solely for the contracting officer's information and without at the very least an implied request that the contracting officer make a decision as to entitlement, any other finding offends logic." That's the case here. This was not an invoice. It was not an email. It was a very, very well detailed document for a claim for due to breaches to the contract. And I just want to refer the court to another quote relating to the idea that in any way a negotiation can somehow negate a claim. In Transamerica, this court stated, and I'm quoting, "There's no necessary inconsistency between the existence of a valid CDA claim and an expressed desire to continue to mutually work toward a claim's resolution." And it refers to a citation to Congress, and it states that the purpose of the Contract Disputes Act was to induce resolution of more contract disputes by negotiation prior to litigation. And that's all we were ever trying to do, and it was common business sense. It was pursuant to the purpose of the CDA to try to resolve this prior to going to litigation, which is costly. And I have nothing further to add.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under submission.
Thank you, Your Honor.